Thousand Hills Lifetime Grazed Beef. Grass-fed beef right here in Minnesota, you know. We make a career talking about clean water, native habitat, and some of the best environmental practices. That's exactly why I'm so excited about Thousand Hills. You know, it is locally raised beef done differently. You see, Thousand Hills uses what is called regenerative agriculture to raise their cattle. Those beef cows, they graze in fields of wild grasses, and they move between a lot of different fields of grass. It is a sustainable ecosystem free of synthetic fertilizers and chemical herbicides. It's a system of agriculture that promotes clean water, natural grasses, and the best beef you've tasted. It's beef raised the right way. You can check out Thousand Hills Lifetime Grazed Grass-Fed Beef to understand their regenerative agricultural practices and fall in love with Thousand Hills beef.
Hi, everybody. Welcome again to another Minnesota Bound podcast. Ron Chera, your host today. Thank you for joining us. Don't know how many of you remember when Iowa, the great state of Iowa, was a pheasant hunting destination almost equal to South Dakota, but there was a time. And then the state fell on some, poor pheasant hunting times. But we're wondering where they're at today. With that question in mind, I've asked Iowa's pheasant guru to join us today with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Todd Bogenschutz is with us. Todd, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, listen, Iowa has an interesting pheasant history. Now, a lot of folks don't know. I grew up in northeast Iowa, which wasn't really good pheasant country, but there were some there and enough to keep a kid like me interested. But then at one time, northern Iowa was really the place to be near Cresco, and I'm giving a little my personal history. I remember when I was at Iowa State, there was a study about why there weren't any pheasants south of the interstate or Highway 30 back then. And they didn't know if it was the minerals in the soil or whatever it was. I think it was habitat. But today, northern Iowa is, at least north central Iowa, is mostly corn and soybeans. And southern Iowa and northwest Iowa are pheasant hotspots. Tell us a little bit about what happened in Iowa at a time when they were really challenging South Dakota as the pheasant hunting capital?
Well, and kind of the recent window, that would be about 1985 when the CRP program started. You know, we, like Minnesota and a lot of the other states, were losing a lot of our hay and small grains as, you know, soybeans kind of became the dominant crop besides corn. And then CRP came along and instantly put, you know, 36 million acres across the country of grassland on the state. And Iowa was blessed to have about 2.2 million acres enrolled in a very short order by about 1988. Within 4 years, we saw quite a massive habitat increase, grassland habitat. And so did Minnesota and the other states out in the Midwest here. And that jumped our, what I call our total pheasant habitat in the state. So to about over 5 million acres right there by 1988. And of course, our pheasant populations responded to that. You know, we were regularly shooting well over 1 million roosters to 1.5 million roosters through the late 80s into the late 90s, you know, up into almost, last time we shot 1 million birds was 2003.
Wow.
So, you know, we were usually, a kind of juggling match. You know, I used to kid the guys in South Dakota, we were number one, and they'd say we're number one. And, you know, our harvest might have differed by a couple hundred thousand birds, you know, a couple years we'd beat them, they'd beat us. So certainly, you know, that was really good, good hunting, as you recall, a lot of it in the northern part of Iowa. But then, you know, Congress changed CRP and lowered the program, and we lost a bunch of that habitat. And so today, you know, we're sitting at statewide, maybe 2.7 million acres of habitat. You know, in that heyday, we were at 5 million, so cut in half.
Yeah. Todd, for folks that are wondering what CRP, that stands for Conservation Reserve Program, and what did it mean to pheasants? For folks that are wondering, why did CRP make a difference? What is CRP?
CRP is just, you know, marginal land that USDA encouraged farmers to stop farming and seed it down to permanent grass and leave it, you know, to help with crop prices and, you know, help clean up water, reduce soil erosion, were kind of the primary benefits. So pheasants initially were just kind of a luxury benefit of the program because it wasn't the intent of the program when they started it. But when people saw the response of pheasants to all that habitat, it became one of the objectives of CRP. Soil, water, and now wildlife are kind of the co-equal purposes. But what that did for pheasants is put year-round habitat on the ground that historically things like hay and small grains had provided, nesting cover, broodering cover, etc. And CRP created very similar type habitat. So when we added all that habitat to the state in a very short period of time, you know, the birds obviously responded to it very rapidly, undisturbed through their nesting season, good winter cover, good broodering cover. And, you know, the numbers and the counts kind of support how important it is for a species like pheasant.
It goes right back to, if you want pheasants, you need habitat, a place to live, eat, and reproduce. It's amazing to me that some folks still cling to the, you probably have them in Iowa too, they cling to the theory that if we had fewer coyotes or fox or skunks or owls or whatever, we'd be back in the pheasant heydays. I think that's kind of fading away, but certainly the proof is on the is there. Today, coming up this fall when Iowa's pheasant season opens, what kind of a harvest prediction are you making? You said at one time you were at 1 to 1.5 million roosters. Give us an idea just how far down Iowa has gone as a pheasant state.
So, you know, our last time we harvested a million roosters was 2003. And then, of course, CRP was changing with farm bills. And like all other states, we were still continuing to lose hay and small grains. So our population had been trickling down. You know, we were shooting 800,000 to 750,000 birds. But then in 2007, we also had some weather events that about 5 years worth that really hammered us. We'd never seen catastrophic weather like that for Iowa anyway.
And you're talking, so blizzards? Blizzards?
You know, well over 750,000 birds. By 2011, our harvest was down to 100,000.
Wow.
And I mean, it's not that we lost a whole bunch of CRP rate. We were losing habitat too, but most of that was weather driven.
Wow.
And, you know, our hunter numbers showed it. You know, back in 2007, before we had the bad weather years, we had over 100,000 pheasant hunters. By 2013, we were down to 40,000.
Wow.
I mean, some more, you know, so to shoot a lot of pheasants, you got to have hunters. You got to have birds and you got to have the hunters to do it. So
right. We
really bottomed out right there with that weather and habitat trends continued in the background. But what we're talking about today is we're kind of seeing an uptick again. We basically over the last 5 to 7 years now have been kind of recovering from that weather and having pretty good harvests. And, you know, I think we probably have the birds right now to shoot 500,000 roosters again. We don't have the hunters.
Mm-hmm.
Our hunters have come back, but we've not gotten back up to the 100,000 that we had in 2007. Last year was a good year. The most hunters we've had in probably more than a decade. We had almost 62,000 pheasant hunters last year, which you've got to go back to, oh my gosh, 2010, the last time we had that many hunters. So. But our roadside counts are pretty similar to what we had back in 2007 when we shot over 500,000 roosters.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the birds are there. If we had the hunters, I'm thinking we could shoot 500,000. But that being said, last year with 60,000 hunters, we shot 300,000 roosters. So people were pretty happy. Harvest for hunter was right there up where the long-term average has been. So I wasn't hearing too many complaints last year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, Iowa's been in the doldrums. There are a lot of reasons why. Primarily it's, you know, corn and soybeans, ethanol and price of land, and it goes on and on. There are a lot of things against the ringneck pheasant. And, you know, there's no evil doers here, just maybe some stupid ones. But anyway, but I know, Todd, your department and some landowners, et cetera, you've tried to come back in different ways that make conservation sense. A couple of years ago, I was down in southwest Iowa, extreme southwest, just a few miles from Nebraska, hunting pheasants and quail. The pheasant hunting was not that great. I think it was more a weather issue than anything. We had these beautiful, I don't know, November, warm November days. The birds flew out to the pick corn, never came into the grassland. You know how that is. But anyway, I saw a tremendous amount of grassland that your department and some of your wildlife managers were working with private landowners, etc. Do you have a name for this program, a pheasant comeback program, if you will?
It's called our Iowa Habitat and Access Program, or IHAP for short.
Mm-hmm. Explain that.
So, you know, we didn't have a walk-in program prior to funding coming along in the Farm Bill, and the Farm Bill provided some money for us. And so we've never... One of the things that we hear from our resident and non-resident hunters is how friendly Iowa landowners are when it comes to hunting. And so we've never, from an agency perspective, we've never really felt we had an access issue. We've always felt it's a habitat issue. And so that's why we never kind of approached the access side of it. But when this program came along, we thought maybe we could get the best of both worlds. We need more habitat. We need better habitat where we already have it. And so we took that money and we're encouraging landowners to manage their private CRP much like we would manage our public areas. So, you know, we want nesting cover, we want food sources, we want winter cover. And a lot of times CRP has nesting cover, but a lot of times it's lacking food and winter cover. And so we're providing landowners incentives to do that other habitat in exchange for paying for that habitat. The landowners are giving us access. So we're getting better habitat, which is the priority for our agency. And the hunters, you know, icing on top, so to speak, is, oh, yeah, you guys can go hunt those areas too.
How widespread is this Iowa Habitat and Access Program?
So we're almost an all-time high, if not an all-time high. We've got 35 to 40,000 acres open in the state this year.
And well, scattered around
private CRP.
Scattered around the state?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What kind of money is this program? What kind of money does it require?
So I think our overall cost per acre is running right around, I want to say, $15 to $18 an acre.
That's pretty cheap, I would say.
Yeah, we're very comparable to, I think, Minnesota's got an access program, South Dakota, Nebraska. I think we're all kind of in that ballpark. They do theirs a little bit different.
So this is the $15 or $18 is above and beyond what the landowner gets for a CRP per acre, right?
That figure is what it's costing us to do the habitat work.
Okay.
You know, so we're paying the landowner's portion there. That's what it's ultimately costing us. The landowners really don't. They get their CRP payment as they normally would.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if they were going to do that habitat work themselves, they would have to pay with that out of their own pocket. We're coming in and offering incentives so they don't have to do that. We're covering that. And so we're getting better habitat, more birds, and a place for people to hunt.
Does this program have some life beyond a few government whims here? I mean, is this something that you think you can keep going in Iowa, and how popular is it?
It's very popular. You know, we're finding about 85% to 95% support for the program among hunters and the landowners enrolled. So they're both very high. Our landowners like the program. Our hunters like the program. We do put a bunch of state money in it, but certainly a lot of it comes through USDA grants. And so far, those have been continued in the Farm Bill, and we expect to continue in the next one. That funding would go away. Minnesota is much the same way. They also get those same kind of grants that we do. Mm-hmm. I think our legislature would act to, I think there'd be quite an uprising if all of a sudden that went away now just because of the success with it. And so I think our legislature would find a way to fund it. But until that happens, I think they're happy if we just keep getting the USDA grants.
Hey there, Bill Shirk, the man about the woods. You know what? It's time to relax, and Voyager can help. Voyager builds custom saunas for your home, backyard, business, and you know what? The pick of the Shirk family, we love Voyager's mobile saunas that go anywhere we want to go. Clear grade cedar benches, spray foam insulation, Kuma wood-fired stoves, or Hilo electric heaters. These are Finnish-influenced hand-built saunas that will last a lifetime. They're constructed with care by the hometown Voyager's team. You know, the Shirk family loves our Voyager mobile sauna. Voyager, a Minnesota movement influenced by Finnish culture. Visit voyagersaunas.com and get ready to distress. Trust me, it works.
Do you know Connecticut? The Shirks, we love our Connecticut water. No secret. We live in the country and we have that ironclad well water. Well, we treat all of our water with the Connecticut Whole Home Water Treatment System. And we also use Connecticut's K5 drinking water system. You know that white buildup you get on the faucets at home? We've got none of that. Our dishes are squeaky clean and shiny. Katie also loves what Connecticut Water does for both her hair and her skin, and the Shirk boys drink the absolute heck out of Connecticut Water. They will not leave the house for school or for the hockey rink or for the soccer fields without filling their water bottles. What else do you have to say? Our water tastes great, and the foul smell is gone. Call Connecticut like the Shirks did and look forward to clean, safe water.
I can't exactly remember. When I was in down in Iowa a couple of years ago in the extreme southwest corner, I picked up a Star Tribune, not Star Tribune, a Des Moines Register. And there was an article there that basically said that Iowans don't care if they don't have pheasant hunting anymore, something to that effect. And I go, well, you know, internet, phones, kids, declining hunting numbers, et cetera, painted kind of a gruesome picture of Iowa's attitude towards not being a pheasant hunting mecca anymore. Some of that's understandable. What the heck? You have some people in Iowa don't remember when you had good pheasant hunting. But yourself, as somebody who pays a lot of attention to this is your career. I assume you're an avid ringneck pheasant hunter, or just somebody who is very interested in the bird itself and concerned. In a nutshell, where do you think Iowa can be down the road as a pheasant hunting state?
Well, I think you kind of hit it early in the program, Ron. I mean, it's all about habitat. you know, when we had 5 million acres of habitat, we averaged 35 to 45 birds on our survey routes. And we shot 1 million roosters. Today we have half the habitat and we're running about 17 to 25 birds a route. I mean, this isn't rocket science. I got half the habitat, so we have half the population. Mm-hmm. You know, and our hunters kind of revolve around what the population does to some extent. And so, you know, you kind of expect lower hunter numbers with lower bird numbers, but you know, I had a gentleman in Southwest Iowa ask me, you know, do you think we'll ever get back to the heyday? And I said, well, one thing I've learned with wildlife is you never count wildlife out. You never say never. You know, to me, it's all about tell me what farm programs are going to do. Yeah. You know, if we suddenly start planting switchgrass to make ethanol, and 50% of the farms out there all of a sudden have switchgrass fields, and instead of replacing some of that corn and beans, we could see pheasant numbers like we haven't seen in years. But
funny you would mention.
Look in the pheasant, you know, look in that crystal ball and tell me where our farm policy's going. And
yeah, you just touched on my dream that half of Iowa could be waving prairie grass in the name of ethanol instead of corn. And that is a possibility down the road if they can solve a few issues with grass as a source of ethanol versus corn. So I'm glad you mentioned that. By the way, folks, we're talking with Todd Bogenschutz, upland game biologist for the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, talking about the ups and downs of Iowa pheasant fortunes. And sounds like the fortunes are slowly coming back, which is good. Iowa, you know, let me speak for a second here, Todd. I've been born and raised there. My first story I ever sold for money was a story about the fact that Iowa's white-tailed deer are some of the biggest in the nation because it comes back to the quality of the soil. And everybody knows Iowa, the tall corn state. So when you get good habitat, like CRP you had for pheasants, the wildlife is going to respond to that in part, again, based on the quality of the soil. So that's the end of my speech, Todd, but I did want to switch topics here momentarily. When I was in Iowa State University, we had pretty good quail hunting in the southern tier of counties in Iowa. What's the status of quail in Iowa these days?
You know, recently it had been very good. Matter of fact, you know, our roadside counts got to numbers, 2014 through 2018 that I didn't think were possible anymore. Hmm. We had some really mild weather in southern Iowa. The southern third is our primary quail range. We really don't have quail much north of there.
Right.
Around the northern fringe. And so it's very same with pheasants. You know, the small grains went away, kind of the small farming, the messy farming, Roundup. Quail are a little bit different than pheasants. They kind of really like that early successional weedy habitat. They don't like the rank cover that pheasants do, but they do like that shrubby component. And farms have gotten bigger, and so, you know, people bulldoze out those woody draws and stuff to turn that big equipment around. And so our quail numbers, like most of the country, had been going down. But in 2011, we shot 4,500 quail statewide. And by 2018, we shot 50,000.
Oh, my.
I mean, people were, you know, having 3 and 4 and 5 covey days there in 16, 17, 18. Matter of fact, I had one gentleman tell me he flushed 100 quail hunting a mile and a half road ditch in southern Iowa. And I'm like, really? 100 quail? I said, you realize that's 10 coveys if there's 10 birds in a covey. I'm not calling you a liar. I'm just saying that's pretty amazing. And so, but that's what he said. And so, yes, we had some really good hunting. And, but, you know, that was mostly a weather artifact. You know, we had about 4 mild winters in a row, really good overwinter survival. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we saw the benefits of that with the reproduction the following year. And so that's kind of why we peaked up, you know, 2019, 2020, we kind of came back to more normal weather. And the last year that I have figures for, 2020, we shot 17,000. So we're kind of back down to maybe more normal counts. So There's definitely quail in southern Iowa, if you know where to look for them, if you know what habitat to look for.
Indeed. So a couple of years ago, as I said, we did a little quail hunting, and we flushed some coveys. got one or two birds, as I recall. Part of our issue was we had some pointers, which are perfect for quail, but somebody also brought a flushing dog, which is not perfect for quail. And the flushing dog would go down the hedgerow, the the tree line, and he'd get a nose full of pheasant or quail scent, and he'd go down there. You couldn't stop him, and he'd bust that covey before we were in shotgun range. So I don't know. The person who brought the flushing dog will remain nameless. You probably know him, but turns out we didn't do so well.
Hi, I'm Laura Shera, and did you know that a propane gas furnace lifespan averages 20 years, while electric heat pumps only last 14 years? And propane furnaces work in all temperatures while delivering warm and consistent heat to your home. Why buy two heating systems when one propane furnace can do it all? It lasts longer, works better, and it costs less. These things and more are done with propane today. The right energy, right now.
And North Dakota Tourism. Start planning your fall hunt in North Dakota at legendarynd.com. You know, North Dakota is home to more than 800,000 plots hunting acres. That is private land that landowners open to public hunting. And the plots guides, they show you exactly where all this secret land sits. Right now, North Dakota's ringneck pheasant crowing counts are up 15% this year. That is really good news. The state is also home to an estimated 2.9 million breeding ducks. North Dakota, it is an absolute outdoor oasis just waiting. Plan your trip and bag your limit this fall in North Dakota. Visit legendarynd.com.
But Todd, I wanted to thank you for joining me today. We're probably wrap this up. I think we can say that Iowa had fallen on hard times, but you folks, you Iowans, are working to bring your birds back. In some cases, weather and farm programs will determine the future success. But before I go, I think there's, it seems to me that Northwest Iowa, for one reason or the other, has stayed pretty good pheasant hunting. Can you explain why that is? Do they just have more grassland naturally, more CRP naturally? What's going on in Northwest Iowa?
I think Northwest, North Central, you know, it's in the Prairie Pothole region. So as you're aware, Ron, even in Minnesota, there's a lot of money focused there by the Fish and Wildlife Service for waterfowl. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've acquired a bunch of land there, as has Minnesota and the Dakotas and the Prairie Pothole. And so we have that core grassland, wetland habitat that, you know, is consistent from year to year. And so definitely that's why I think we see, you know, the population stay fairly stable there. Had hunters coming back from South Dakota the last couple of years and hunt Iowa on the way back, and they told me they did better in Iowa than they did in South Dakota.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. So,
we don't have as much habitat as we had in the 80s, but where we do have habitat, I would argue our hunting is probably just as good as South Dakota. They just have way more, fortunately, than us right now. So,
right. Well, Todd, I'm going to leave you with a story I feel I should share with you. As you know, I grew up in Iowa, went to Iowa State. Then I left and went to work for the South Dakota Game and Fish Department. I was gone some time when I got invited to come back to Griswold, Iowa. I had a friend down there. We had good pheasant hunting there. And so it had been several years since I'd been back to my old home state. So I was really looking forward to it. And at 8 o'clock on opening, I think it was opening day, I don't remember. It was 8 o'clock was when your shooting hour begins, at least was back then. And I'm walking out there with my dog, my lab, and my gosh, I didn't go 20 yards and up goes a big old rooster right in front of me. He's cackling, he's flying away, and I raise my gun up and I fire once or twice and he's still flying. To this day, I can still see him flying away. I can still hear him. And I had to laugh because I was, it was like so looking forward to this. And then what do I do with the first Iowa pheasant? I can't hit the damn thing. So some cases, you tend to remember, in many ways, the birds that you missed more than the ones that you hit.
So I think every experience in the field is different, and that's why we do it. You know, if we got our limit every time, or it was the same every time, it wouldn't have the mystique that it does.
Indeed. Todd Bogenschutz, thank you again for joining me, upland game biologist for the Iowa DNR, and thank you all for listening to this Minnesota Bound podcast. Just a reminder to our sponsors for this edition of Minnesota Bound podcast is Voyager Saunas, Connecticut, Minnesota Propane, North Dakota Tourism, and Thousand Hills Beef. Thanks again for listening to the Minnesota Bound podcast, and remember, introduce a kid to the great outdoors. I'm Ron Shera.